Well, summertime and the time of year that book lovers search for that perfect companion to a hot day on the beach or a backyard hammock. Now, these books can be ones that are light and frivolous, but they can also be the ones that you never had the chance to read before, those epic classics that easily can fill a long summer's day. We're talking about this year's summer reading list, and I'm joined by some folks at five independent bookstores in North Carolina. Sarah Godden is here. She's general manager of Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
Good to have you here. Erica Eisdorfer is a bookseller at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you.
Also with us is Tom Campbell, who runs the Regulator Bookshop in Durham. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Frank.
And Steve Mitchell here from Scuppernong Books in Greensboro. Hello, Steve.
Huzzah, Frank.
Also, we go to the mountains. Linda Marie Barrett is the general manager. You just said huzzah.
I did.
I just heard that. Linda Marie Barrett is general manager at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville, and she joins us from WCQS in Asheville. Linda Marie, hello.
Hello.
And we want to hear from you as well. If you're out there listening and you have summer books that you know we need to read or just ideas about books you've loved to read in the past, call us, 877-962-9862. You can send us an email at sot@wunc.org. You can also tweet at us, but we're at 877-962-9862 if you want to hear your luscious voice. Now, Sarah et al., let me start with you, though, Sarah. We're talking about summer reading. When we think about summer reading, how do you sort of break it down? What do you think about when you think of the summer reading list?
For me, summer reading is not, and I guess this distinguishes it from beach reading, perhaps, but I really think of summer reading as having more time and diving into the things that I didn't get a chance to read. But I probably tend to read things that are more enjoyable as opposed to taking on things that I think I ought to read in the summer.
How about you, Tom?
Yeah, I think the classic definition of summer reading is like guilty pleasures. We for a couple of years had displays in the summer of good trash reading.
So what is that? Give me just a rough idea. What would be the good trash reading on that shelf?
You want me to name names?
Well,
some good mysteries. Like, I read Michael Conley mysteries. They're set in L.A. He's got this detective, Harry Bosch. He's written probably 20 novels and about this guy. And they're wonderful, and they're engaging. And what I think unites summer reading, though, is really story. It's got to have a good story. It's got to grab you and get you into it now, probably more so than stuff that you read rest of the year.
Linda Marie at Malaprop's, what do you think?
Well, I think I tend to take on something a little more challenging this time of year, maybe because there's more sunlight rather than taking on in December when it's really dark. So I'll go for something challenging rather than light right now.
You just have a little more time. How about you, Steve? What do you think?
I tend to go for challenging also. For years and years, I would pick one really massive tome, one classic that I hadn't read before, and kind of take that on for the summer. But I think all booksellers are reading five or six books at a time, too. So there's a wide spread there.
Well, Sarah, I'll let you answer that. But also, based on what Steve just said, do your habits change in the summer? Erica, do your habits change in the summer?
Mine don't. I read all the stuff all the time. I mean, if I'm on an airplane, I want to read something really fast, I suppose, that makes the time go away. But it's not like I'm turning my brain off. I still want beautiful language and I still want something new under the sun.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about what's new to you and what makes a summer reading list. You can call us at 877-962-9862 and join those of us who are here in our studio and away from bookstores around the state of North Carolina, 877-962-9862, to give us your summer reading list on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today, we're running down this year's summer reading list. I've got guests, a great group of guests today from independent bookstores across the state. Sarah Godden is here from Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. Eric Eisdorfer from Flyleaf in Chapel Hill. Tom Campbell, the Regulator Bookshop in Durham. Steve Mitchell, co-owner of Scuppernong Books in Greensboro. And Linda Marie Barrett, who's the general manager at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville. Linda Marie, let's talk about some of the books that you recommend. One of them is H is for Hawk. Can you tell us about that one?
H is for Hawk is this amazing book we're reading for our book club right now. I'm the co-host of a book club called Wild, which stands for Women in Lively Discussion. And so we picked this one. The Helen MacDonald is writing about how she deals with her grief after the sudden death of her father. She adored her father, and one of the interests they shared was bird watching. So in the aftermath of his death, she decides to raise and tame a goshawk. A goshawk is about twice the size of hawks that are usually raised by falconers, so it's really an unusual choice for a woman. And so this, what I love about the book is it's very beautifully crafted. The language is very poetic, but it's also very raw and real about grief. And so when I read it, it was ultimately uplifting and so worth the journey with her during that process.
You have a sample maybe you can read for us?
Yes. I'm going to pick a passage that describes her first hunt with her hawk, who she names Mabel. What I had just done was nothing like bird watching. It was more like gambling, though the stakes were infinitely bloodier. At its heart was a willed loss of control. You pour your heart, your skill, your very soul into a thing, into training a hawk, learning the form in racing or the numbers in cards, then relinquish control over it. That is the hook. Once the dice rolls, the horse runs, the hawk leaves the fist, you open yourself to luck, and you cannot control the outcome. Yet everything you have done until that moment persuades you that you might be lucky. The hawk might catch her quarry, the cards might fall perfectly, the horse make it first past the post. That little space of irresolution is a strange place to be. You feel safe because you are entirely at the world's mercy. It is a rush. You lose yourself in it. And so you run towards those little shots of fate where the world turns. That is the lure. That is why we lose ourselves when powerless from hurt and grief, in drugs or gambling or drink, in addictions that collar the broken soul and shake it like a dog. I had found that my addiction on that day out with Mabel. It was as ruinous in a way as if I'd taken a needle and shot myself with heroin. I had taken flight to a place from which I didn't want to ever return.
Linda Marie Barrett reading from the book H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald. Linda Marie, the general manager of Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville. We're talking about summer reading list. And, I'm with you, Linda Marie. The idea that summer is the time for me to actually take the time to digest books about big topics like grief and find them uplifting. And I can turn that on its head and find those big topics uplifting when I've got the time. But if I'm trying to jam it in while I'm doing everything else, then it just becomes about grief and another grief. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of with you. We're taking phone calls today, 877-962-9862, to find out what you as a listener like to read in the summer. Jane has an idea in Sanford. Hello, Jane.
Hi. Oh, Lord, after what you just read, I feel even worse. But
No, nothing is off limits. Nothing is off limits.
Okay. I've already finished them, unfortunately, and there are 19. Shirley Russo Murphy, The Joe Gray Mysteries. It is a talking cat. And when I picked the first one up, I was like, I don't know. And then I got hooked. And she makes some bubbles, and it's like, you don't care. If she makes a mistake in her writing, you want to keep going because the personalities of the cat are so engaging, and she gets them so right. But I still haven't told my family I've read them.
I see. Well, is there any special, are they kind of summer reading for you? It sounds like you're kind of reading them year-round, Jane.
Well, I only discovered them like a month ago.
Okay. So
I will get my library to order them in, and I read them in order.
Well, we will check back with you in September to find out if this is extended beyond what is normal. But thank you for calling in, Jane. That's great. But I think it does get to this question of sort of whether it's a guilty pleasure or something that you go in depth. Erica?
Yeah, I feel the same way. One of my favorite books came out earlier this summer. It's called Spill, Simmer, Falter, Wither. And it's a debut novel by Sarah Baum. And it's a book about a man who is a misfit and his dog who is a misfit. It's not sweet. It's rough. It's like sharp as a bark. But the language is so beautiful and you feel it so intensely how this man falls in love with this dog. And I'm not sure I would say it's a story of redemption. It's hard to sell this book a little because you think, man, dog, yeah, same old schmaltz. But this is not that. This is a tough one and a deep one. I I loved it so much. It stuck with me
Well, it
for
sounds
a while
like so
now.
Much of it turns on the character. I mean, if your cat's a character that you can believe, it's okay that it's a cat.
Yeah, and in this case, the man, he gets this dog from a shelter because he feels like he could be saved by it, but whether he is or not, you'll have to read to find out.
Let's go back to the phones now. Caitlin is on the line from Raleigh. Hello, Caitlin.
Hi.
Do you have a suggestion for us?
Oh, man. Well, when I gave my comment, I actually had a lot of suggestions, but I'll pick the biggest one. I usually will take the summer to read particularly large books, especially series that I haven't been able to get to yet. And this year it is Voyager, the third book in the Outlander series, since the show just is about to finish up doing it second season, which is the second book.
Well, is there anything about the summer that makes it more likely that you're going to pick up a series, or is it just a kind of coincidence?
There's something about going to the pool and being outside by myself and having a few hours at a time. I feel a little, there's longer days and it's more indulgent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Caitlin. 877-962-9862 if you want to join our conversation. Steve, you have a recommendation for us? And
well, I was thinking while people were talking, you know, I like the big classic books, but short story collections are also great things to have in the summer because you can kind of toss them in there between the heavy stuff, or you can read a short story, a couple of short stories on a plane or by the beach. So I had three, two of which I haven't read yet that I'm excited to read. One is Get in Trouble by Kelly Link, which was nominated for a Pulitzer this year. Kelly Link is actually from Greensboro. And Brian, my cohort, read this book and loved it. And I just haven't gotten to it yet. They're very strange and very interesting short stories. Then there's Allegheny Rising by Matthew Neal Null. Null wrote Honey from the Lion about a year and a half. It was published about a year and a half ago. Really gritty kind of book about lumbering in West Virginia during the 19th century with just amazing language. So this is a short story collection. And then the third is just a favorite author of mine, Cesar Ira. And his collection came out last year called The Musical Brain. And the stories in The Musical Brain are just so, they're so amazingly wonderful and magical. They're like toys you don't know how to play with. they just unfold in these beautiful crystalline kind of ways, and it's just magic.
And you brought a book with you, too.
I did bring a book with me. Another one. Half of my list is filled with books I haven't read, but they're books that I want to read. And this one was just released. It's called White Rage by Carol Anderson, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide. And it actually traces race and race relations from the Civil War to now. And I think it's going to, and there was a review of it in the Times this weekend. So I'm really interested in this book, too.
Sarah Godin, I guess it raises a question for me about, and from the point of view of a bookseller, does nonfiction sell better or does fiction sell better? And is fiction more likely for you as summer reading than nonfiction?
Probably. You know, all of us tend to, because we're booksellers, we have to read months out. So summer is kind of a time where you can give yourself maybe a little break from reading the things that are coming out the next season that you have to be on top of for publishers and customers. But we sell nonfiction and fiction both very well. So I don't think it's I tend to probably in the summer to read more fiction and any time, to be honest.
Well, you brought a couple of recommendations with us. You want to talk about one of them?
Sure. Then? One of them, this has a North Carolina connection, and it just came out recently in paperback, The Story of Land and Sea by Katie Simpson Smith. She's actually from Mississippi and lives in New Orleans, a young woman who writes way too beautifully for her age. But she went to graduate school in history at UNC and spent some time on the North Carolina coast while she was here. So her book is set just after the Revolution on the coast near Beaufort. And she really takes you back to that time. She just has a gift for incorporating the language and the cadence of that time. And She was inspired to write this story by seeing a grave marker that said unknown girl buried in a rum keg. And that was the inspiration. And it follows the girl's story and her mother, her father, and their slave, Molly, and her son, and goes back and forth, and actually the woman's father. And it's a wonderfully, beautifully written book that takes you back to a different time and just immerses you completely in that time.
Do you have a sample for us?
I have a very, very brief sample. Let me get my glasses on here. Find the right passage. This is the girl's mother. It is past midnight and Helen is asleep. She holds in her hand a few stalks of half-eaten sea oats. She spent the day following the narrow shadow of the fort's wall as it moved around its circle, crouching in its shade. At noon, the sun inescapable, she had crawled out for sustenance. She dug up a clump of beach grass, cutting at the roots with her teeth, before she noticed the hulk of the British ships in the channel behind her. She crawled back to the fort and washed the sand out of her mouth with remaining water in her flask. She saw phantoms crawling in the dunes. Tomorrow she will try to find her way home, after she sleeps.
Sarah Godden from Quail Ridge Books, reading a book by Katie Simpson Smith. Tell me the title again.
The Story of Land and Sea.
Yeah, she was on the show as well for that one. And we are taking your calls today to talk about your favorite books. We have booksellers here from Quail Ridge Books, Flyleaf Books, The Regulator, and Scuppernong Books, as well as Malaprop's Bookstore. And, of course, you who can join us and tell us what you're reading this summer, as Maurice has done from Aurora, North Carolina. Hello, Maurice.
Yes, sir. How are you today?
Doing well. How about you?
Well, I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Good.
And I wanted to recommend Jan Mayer's Dark Money, which
yep.
goes into the funding of the various political activities, including a Chapter 13 on North Carolina. And I can read you a little piece of that if you'd like.
Well, it's going to be real little. I will cut you off if it goes too long because we're trying to get a lot of voices.
Never mind.
We had her on. You know, we did a whole show on dark money, and Jane was here.
I
believe chapter 13, ironically enough, is the Art Pope chapter, I believe.
That is correct.
So we did and talked about North Carolina politics and how big money is really influencing the way we do politics in America. So very interesting.
As far as I'm concerned, that should be mandatory reading this summer.
For everybody.
We're facing an election in a couple months, and we're having to make decisions about our future and the way things are run, particularly with respect to gerrymandering, which is mentioned on page 334.
Great recommendation. Thank you for your call, Maurice. I really,
yes,
really appreciate it. Dark Money is the book he's talking about. Jane Mayer again. I think so far you've named three authors now who have been actually on this show. But I wonder about, well, I guess we've asked the question about fiction and nonfiction, because that's a tough read. I mean, that going through that book, for instance, it's important, but it's devastating to see how corrupting money has become and how little influence we in the middle have and how much influence the bankers and Wall Street have in influencing American politics. Erica, what about your recommendations? Give us an idea what's tops on your list.
So if you're going to Australia and you want to just like time travel, I have the book for you. It's called Dodgers Like Brooklyn Dodgers, and it's by Bill Beverly. And it's about a very moral, very introspective 16-year-old kid who's in a drug gang. And he is it's a novel. It's a thriller, but it's sort of weird to call a book this great a thriller, this well-written. But he's instructed along with two or three other kids to go kill somebody in the middle of the country. So what it is it like the classic American road trip story, mm-hmm. but just turned totally on its head. It's totally enthralling. It's what I call a cereal book, like Rice Krispies, because I can't cook while I'm reading it. I just have to read it, so my family has to eat cereal. You're going to Australia, you won't even know you were on the plane. It's that good.
All right, so give us the title again. Do you have a little reading?
Yeah, I do. It's called Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. This is when they first start out from L.A. They crawled past big yellow lights saying something was happening up ahead. East, he's the protagonist. East tried to see over the people in the other cars racked around the van. White man in an Acura to the right, phone pinned to the top of the wheel. Line of little Latin boys in the cab of a pickup, sullen and sleepy. Walter was fishing out a third piece of chicken. Gonna be Christmas before we even get out of L.A., he mumbled. Cars merged fitfully. They'd reached the obstruction. A vast brown Pontiac lay beached in the right lane, broken down and proud of it. Two women, bleached hair, shining and loose, awaited the tow like parade queens. They sat up on the back, perched, putting lotion on. After them, the speed picked up.
Erica Eisdorfer of Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill, reading from Dodgers by Bill Beverly, one of the books that made her summer reading list. And we're asking for yours as well. Bob is called in from Chapel Hill. Hello, Bob. Hey, Bob.
Hello,
you there?
Frank.
You got any recommendations for us?
I'm here. Well, actually, the timing is terrific because Flyleaf is my main liner.
Yeah, there in Chapel Hill, it would be.
Time. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you.
The thought I had is that most of us, many of us, are traveling in summers. And, of course, we look up books that are factual guides and so on. But I think it's more fun to read books that give you a sense of, that read like novels, that give you a sense of where you are. For example, I just came back from a 10-day singing tour of northern Spain. And my companion was The Sun Also Rises. I mean, here was Jake in town after town that I was in. We shared a love for San Sebastian, which has become my favorite, among top 10 towns. And, you know, right on through. So you know, you have a feeling. And he was also there I was in Paris last year for a while. And I sat there with my Paris plan tracking where Jake was walking and Brett was and so on. I mean, it's a different way of looking at where you are. And also, you go looking for the places they went to, which sadly are usually not there. But
fascinating insight. Yeah, it raises a lot of questions. Thank you, Bob, for that call. The question I have for you, Tom Campbell, along those lines is, what about the travelers who come to places like Durham looking for just that, a little bit of kind of where am I, not only in fiction but nonfiction? Is that something that happens to bookstores in the summer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people, lots of folks come to Durham during the summer, bringing kids to camps at Duke, et cetera, et cetera. And like one of the books on my list is Lee Smith's memoir, Dime Store. It's about her growing up. It starts with her growing up in a small town in Southwest Virginia and moves on to college. And then she moves into the Triangle and teaches at Carolina Friends School, lives in Hillsboro. And it's a great introduction to what the South was like and parts of it still are.
Well, it's a great thing about living in North Carolina. If you're traveling to North Carolina and want to find out about the place through fiction, we've got some of the finest fiction writers in the world right here who have made their living embracing and embodying what it is to be Southern. We're talking about summer reading lists today. My guests are from five bookstores, independent bookstores around the state of North Carolina, including Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh, Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill, The Regulator Bookshop in Durham, Scuppernong Books in Greensboro, and Malaprop's Bookshop in Asheville, North Carolina. We'll come back and talk more and take your phone calls. It's summer reading on The State of Things. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We're talking about this year's summer reading list with representatives from five independent bookstores around the state. We're also taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862 or emails at sot@wnc.org. Tom Campbell at The Regulator in Durham, you were just talking about some of your favorites and sort of ways in which also you represent books for people who come from out of town. But give us a sense of maybe number one or two on your list.
Well, a couple are talking about travel and books to read when you're going someplace. Well, when you're going someplace, very often you're going on an airplane, and that's part of the journey. And we like to try and block that out the way it happens these days. but there's a marvelous book called Skyfaring, A Journey with a Pilot by a guy named Mark Van Honecker. And he pilots 747s on long flights around the world, and he is still just completely taken with, isn't it amazing and marvelous that we're up in the sky doing these things. And he gives you that sense, looking out the front window of the plane. He gives you the nuts and bolts of how this works, which is amazing. And the sense of what travel is really all about. He talks about place lag. There's not just time lag. There are place lag. And there are cities, for example, that are so different, the cultures are so different, that they should maybe not be connected by, you know, a 10-hour flight. Like Washington, D.C. and Rio de Janeiro is one example he gives.
There should literally be no, you can't get there from here.
It takes you a while.
You have a sample for us?
Well, my sample is from a book called Sunny's Nights by Tim Sullivan, Lost and Found at a Bar at the Edge of the World. And this guy in 1995 stumbled into a bar in the Red Hook section of Brooklyn, which was a very down-and-out part, working-class part of Brooklyn at the time. He then became completely fascinated and kept coming back to this bar. And it's about, you know, all the things that a really good bar can be. And that's another thing you can do in the summer.
It is.
So here's him talking about his first time in the bar. My eyes came to rest on the barkeep. He resembled Tony Bennett, if Tony Bennett had last seen a barber in 1957. Up close, I decided that if one took Tiny Tim's hair and put it on Gertrude Stein's face, one would get a very good likeness of this man. When my beer arrived and I introduced myself, he said, "My real name is Antonio Raffaele Balzano, but please, call me Sonny." He gripped my hand in both of his and leaned across the bar. He was tall and very slim, but the features on his face were large and rounded as a ship's weathered figurehead. His eyebrows were two silver caterpillars that had come to a halt while walking Indian file across his brow. In the shadows, he appeared a little otherworldly and a little epicene, less the ghost of the Ancient Mariner than that of the Mariner's sister. But now he grasped my hand with the vigor and enthusiasm and curiosity of a man coming upon a compatriot after months lost in the jungle. It was a greeting startling in its sincerity and intensity, and one that I would come to see made to others many times. It expressed, "You belong." To say that he exuded charisma would be like saying Mussolini liked to hear himself talk.
Tom Campbell from the Regulator Bookshop in Durham. What's the name of the book again?
Sonny's Nights, Lost and Found at a Bar on the Edge of the World.
That's great. You talk about another book where you get the ins and outs of the business as well as a novel. That takes us back to Melville and Moby Dick, which we did at the beginning. You learn about the whale a little bit. A couple of notes on baleen in there. And let's go to the phones now. Thomas is in Asheville. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, Frank. How are you doing?
Doing good. What do you got for us?
Okay. So this is a very interesting novel, or actually it's a two-part novel. And I'm interested in young adult novels lately because I have two teenage daughters and I used to read to them a lot. And I think it's important to read to your kids. So this is called The Astonishing Life of Octavian Nothing. It was written by M.T. Anderson and it won a Newbery Award. And it's about a young slave boy who's a child prodigy musician, and these group of philosophers in Boston take him in. It's in the Revolutionary War era, and it's just like the most incredible thing to read. I don't know how else to put it.
Well, thank you, Thomas. Good to hear from you. Thomas in Asheville weighing in today on summer reads, and I guess that's a little bit, you know, part of it too. If you've got kids and you're traveling with them, keeping them interested is, you know, part of the deal. Sarah Godden at Quail Ridge, another recommendation for us?
Sure. First of all, I did want to mention, too, that people have been asking, when are we going to move into our new store? And it's coming up in a couple of weeks, we hope. In fact, we're having our first author reading there July 18th, so we have to be ready. So if you want a sneak peek at our beautiful new store, come July 18th to hear Elizabeth George. But I did want to mention the people that made it possible for Tom's airplane book, the Wright brothers, David McCullough, wrote a really fascinating book about them that has just come out in paperback. And he's, of course, such a great historian. He makes everything come to life and so exciting. And you may think you know the story of the Wright brothers, but until you read this book, there's just so much that you will be amazed at when you do. So.
Another guest that's been on our show, of course, mm-hmm. and particularly the role that their sister played.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's really... Yeah. It's
I knew nothing about that, so that was fascinating.
Circling the Sun is also on your list, right?
It is. And speaking of people who fly, so that's a fictional account by Paula McLean of Beryl Markham, who grew up in Kenya. And this takes place during the 30s, mostly in the 30s, in that... place. And she does a really good job of being very accurate to the story as it is. And Beryl Markham has always been a hero of mine. She wrote a book called West with the Night about her flight. She was the first person to fly from Europe to, well, no, anyway, West with the Night, whichever direction that was. I think she flew from England to Nova Scotia. Yeah. And she also is a horse trainer and a wonderful writer. And this story is just told in a very exciting but very factual and interesting way and takes you to that time and place beautifully.
Great. You have a little excerpt for us?
I did not prepare an excerpt from that one. I didn't know I got more than one.
That's perfect. That's perfect. All right, let's go to Asheville. Linda Marie Barrett, there's one on your list called The Summer Book. How did you come on that as a summer read? It's a little obvious, isn't it?
Linda Marie? It's a beautiful little book that it's not a new book, but it's one I just discovered this year. It's by Tove, I don't know if it's Johnson or Janssen, but she's the creator of the Moomin political cartoons. Mm-hmm. And this novel, it takes place during a summer on a tiny island in the Gulf of Finland, where a grandmother and her granddaughter, Sophia, and her son are vacationing. The book is not very long. It's a series of vignettes between the grandmother and Sophia. And the vignettes offer the reader a sense of this very unusual landscape to our American eyes. But the vignettes are also really funny because of the dialogue between the two characters, because they're always arguing with each other, even though they really obviously love each other. And they love the island, and they're exploring the island, too. So you get a real sense of the natural landscape.
Do you have an excerpt there or not? That's okay.
I do have...
You can make stuff up, too. You can actually, because we can't see you, you can actually just start saying things. You'll say, wow, that's a really well-written book.
Yeah, I'll just tell you about Finland from my perspective. I do have a little excerpt, and... this, you can get a sense of it through young Sophia's eyes, who's about 8 years old, and she's very dramatic. And you also, at the end of it, you get a sense of the way she and her grandmother will argue about anything. Sophia knew that very small islands in the ocean have turf instead of soil. The turf is mixed with seaweed and sand and invaluable bird droppings, which is why everything grows so well among the rocks. For a few weeks every year, there are flowers in every crack in the granite, and their colors are brighter than anywhere else in the whole country. But the poor people who live on the green islands and toward the mainland have to make do with ordinary gardens, where they put their children to work, pulling weeds and carrying water until they are bent with toil. A small island, on the other hand, takes care of itself. It drinks melting snow and spring rain, and then finally dew. And if there is a drought, the island waits for the next summer and grows its flowers then instead. The flowers are used to it and wait quietly in their roots. There's no need to feel sorry for the flowers, grandmother said. The first to come up was the scurvy wart, only an inch high but vital to seamen who live on ship's biscuit. The second came up about 10 days later in the lee of the channel marker, and it was called stepmother, or love and idleness. Sophia and grandmother used to walk out to see it. Sometimes it blossomed at the end of May and sometimes at the beginning of June. It had to be viewed at length. Sophia wondered why it was so important, and grandmother said, "Because it's the first." No, it's the second, Sophia said. But it always comes up in the same place, grandmother said. It occurred to Sophia that all the others did too, more or less, but she didn't say anything.
Linda Marie Barrett from Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville, reading from The Summer Book, one of her favorites and on her summer reading list this summer. We're talking about books, reading, and summer. And I think we're going to talk a little bit about independent bookstores, too, and get a little insight into each of your institutions. Sarah, let me start with you, because the founder of Quail Ridge Books, Nancy Olson, died earlier this year, certainly an important figure in the development of the Triangle, given her the weight and the power that she brought to this area and her commitment to books. Tell us a little bit, remind us about her and about Quail Ridge's place in all of this.
Well, thank you. Nancy was a very, very special person. I knew her for 30 years. We were colleagues first when we each had our own bookstores and would get together weekly and just talk about books and ideas. And then I started working for her 20 years ago. And she was somebody who would always speak her mind, no matter how unpopular it was. and had very strong opinions on if she told you to read something, you did it. And she would talk to book clubs and she'd say, no, no, get rid of all that light, fluffy stuff. This is a book club. You need to read serious stuff. You need to challenge yourselves. And they would be chastened and say, okay, all right, we'll do whatever you say. And she was just great that way, but also full of life and never met a stranger and very warm. And we'll miss her for a long time.
And you're about to move now, new digs.
We are, and we'll have a special place with a portrait of Nancy in the store and some of her book recommendations that we will kind of like, you know, 31 flavors. We'll keep rotating those so people can remember what she recommended.
Steve Mitchell, it's Guppernong. You're among the newcomers to this on the block. I think we've talked about this earlier, but remind us why anybody would get into this business this late in the game.
There's no good reason. No good reason at all, except that you love books, and books are part of your life. Books are part of what makes you a human being, I think. And we love authors, and we love conversation about books and the community of readers and authors and booksellers. And you bring all of those things together into a space, and it's just magic.
Well, the space is important. And I know you at Scuppernong are doing what all the other booksellers are doing at this table and in Asheville, which is providing that space for other activities, for people actually to come together
and
see each other.
Yeah, we saw a bookstore from the beginning as a community space, as an intellectual hub in the community, and a place where all kinds of things can be talked about and discussed. So there's all kinds of events, and we have a good number of public events that are really just about talking about current yeah. questions.
And Erica, you're a relative newcomer, Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill.
I think Flyleaf is going into its seventh year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's doing great. We have over 250 events a year, not so many in the summer, but during the summer we still continue our sci-fi book club and our young adult book club. We're really connected to the community in a such a wonderful way through the libraries and the schools, and I feel like they're the hardest working people in show business. It's a really great store, and more and more titles. I think it takes a bookstore a little while to get really full and rich, and Flyleaf has attained that and more in this past two or three years, I would say.
Well, Tom Campbell at Regulator Bookshop in Durham, you're an old comer to this business. You've been here around 40 years now, right?
Yeah. I joke that I co-founded the Regulator when I was 9 years old. But, yeah. We will have our 40th anniversary this December.
Wow.
And we're trying to figure out what to do about that still. But
what has changed? I mean, obviously the way people read and the way we get our books, the technology has changed. But how does that? What has that meant for you over 40 years?
Yeah, I think not that much actually has changed in the way people come to books. That it's come back. There was a good period where Amazon was going to take over the world. Then ebooks were going to take over the world. And now I think that people have really come back to an appreciation for coming into a place where people have carefully chosen the books that are on the shelf, browsing there, having conversations with real people about books. One of the things that happens in our stores is you can have amazing conversations with people about all kinds of subjects and all kinds of things that are going on in their lives, because books are about everything. And Someone comes up to the counter with a book or asking about books in a certain area, and that spins off.
Well, and you know, when you're in a bookstore, you're surrounded by people who've read a book, and that's going to be important in terms of engaging in conversation. Linda Marie Barrett, Malaprops in Asheville. An interesting story. There's a bookstore that's been around for a while, but also the transformation of Malaprops and the transformation of downtown Asheville are part and parcel of the same story, right?
Yes. When Malaprops just celebrated her 34th birthday, and she was founded and is owned by Emeka Braz. And when Emeka opened the store, downtown was pretty not in a great state, and now it's thriving. And I think Malaprops, as one of the centers of downtown, had a lot to do with the new vibrancy today.
Things going well?
Things are going great, yes.
That's great. Well, I want to thank all of you for being on our program today. Linda Marie Barrett is the general manager at Malaprop's Bookstore in Asheville. Steve Mitchell, co-owner of Scuppernong Books in Greensboro. Tom Campbell runs the Regulator Bookshop in Durham. Erica Eisdorfer is a bookseller at Flyleaf Books in Chapel Hill. And Sarah Godden, general manager of Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. Thank all of you for being on the program. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in and for listening to The State of Things. We've got summer reading lists all over the place, but also at our website, stateofthings.org. And I want to tell you that our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, and Charlie Sheldon Ormond. Robin Copley's our technical director. Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.